are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock, your host, if you don't know me, formerly of Pro Football Focus, RotoWire, KNBR. Now I'm doing some Bay Area sports traffic stuff. You might hear my voice anywhere from Fresno up to Seattle sometimes if you're driving down the road and getting traffic reports. And yeah, you might hear my voice. That might be me under this name or various aliases, depending on the station I'm on at the time. And of course, bringing you the Locked On 49ers podcast daily here, as well as a ton of stuff going up at LockedOn49ers.com, so make sure you check out the website as well. You can find where to subscribe on the website, or you can subscribe on iTunes, rate and review the show there. We're on Spotify. We are everywhere that you can find podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock, or you can email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. That's the best place to get those mailbag questions in, either on Twitter or email. We're going to open up the mailbag probably tomorrow and hit a few with Nick on Wednesday as well. But today, my guest is Eric Crocker, and we're going to ask him what he saw from 49ers training camp and his trained eye, being a former NFL and CFL defensive back, and see what he saw, especially in some of those one-on-ones and seven-on-sevens and 11-on-11s between wide receivers and DBs in 49ers camp. You can also find Eric's work at 4thandnine.com. He and Dylan DeSimone, who I've also had on the show, do a great job there, and also have the Cover 4 podcast talking about the Niners. So let's just get into it and bring on today's guest, Eric Crocker. He is a real good friend of the show now. Had him on a few times. Love talking, especially DBs, with Eric Crocker. He has been embedded watching some 49ers training camp practices, so I had to have Croc on to talk about 49ers, specifically those DBs and the wide receivers and some one-on-ones and some battles we've seen in camp, and seen some glimpses and some clips online. So I want to talk to Eric about those matchups and see who's looking good in camp, who's maybe not looking good in camp, and what we can take away from what we've seen in practice. So Eric, always a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks so much for joining me once again on the show.
Thanks for having me on. You know, I love talking 49ers football.
Heck yeah. I got to start with the one thing that's sticking out in my mind right now was that one rep, and it's probably making its rounds more than any other clip from 49ers camp so far this summer, and that was Marquise Goodwin running by Richard Sherman like he was standing still on one versus one rep, and it was like, okay, I know Marquise Goodwin has that Olympic speed and 4.27 speed, and Richard Sherman coming off an Achilles injury. Did you see that play, and was that like a situation where 49ers fans should be a little bit worried about Richard Sherman getting back to 100% following those Achilles injuries? Because it didn't take very long for Marquise Goodwin to run right by Richard Sherman on that rep.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be too worried. I mean, and everybody knows Richard Sherman, he's never been the fastest person, and Marquise Goodwin is arguably one of the fastest receivers in the league. And it's a different kind of speed. I mean, you know, when he gets those knees up and starts getting to that extra gear, pretty much nobody, especially with, you know, a one-on-one situation or with no help, you really just can't run with him. He's that fast. So I wasn't surprised by it. When I saw Richard Sherman line up and I saw who he was lining up against, I said, that's not going to be good. And sure enough, it wasn't good. So I can do without seeing that matchup again. Hopefully they don't go to that Tuesday.
That's what I was thinking. It was like, oh man, that's not a good look. But at the same time, yeah, that's a sort of a bad matchup and a bad training camp matchup there. But Sherman didn't necessarily look like he was running all that well. So I think maybe there's still a half step for him to be gained here through camp, hopefully before the season starts, because he didn't look like he was running all that well. Maybe he wasn't even going 100% on that matchup.
In the games, you'll play different, too. I mean, you'll know who you're matched up against, and you can do different things. So instead of, you know, really playing an honest press man coverage, he can press bail, knowing that he might have some inside help from a safety, and that'll help him stay on top of the receiver. So, you know, there are definitely different ways to play, but in one-on-one, it is what it is. You just have to play a lot more honest than you would have to in a game.
Yet on Sunday, he's not going to face someone necessarily that fast. And also, he's going to have Adrian Colbert, who's going to be making a beeline from the middle of the field and probably break that up on the sideline anyways, right?
Yeah. And in those situations, you can shadow, you know, one side of the field. You know, I mean, you can shade one side. So if you see that kind of matchup and you know that that doesn't favor Richard Sherman, you can, you know, you can shade your coverage a little bit more, you know, to help out.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So staying on one-on-one matchups there in camp with wide receivers and defensive backs, who is cheating out there? I know I saw a tweet from you talking about guys cheating, throwing in the double moves on those one-on-ones. It's, I mean, it's hard enough to cover guys when you got the whole field open. Some of these guys throwing three moves out there on a route, that's cheating, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think one thing that fans don't understand one-on-ones, how I always viewed them and always looked at them was it's a chance to work on your craft. You know, so there's a lot of different things that you're learning. And one-on-ones is just you and the guy in front of you, and it gives you a chance to just work on those things, but you have absolutely no help. The main thing that I like to see is, you know, just guys compete. You know, and one-on-ones, you know, are your defensive backs even competing? It's something that's made, you know, one-on-ones is for the offense. They're supposed to win. There's no pass rush. The quarterback can really wait until the guy gets open and just, you know, throw it to a perfect spot without having to worry about getting crushed. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, but double moves, yeah. I'm not a fan of double moves in one-on-ones because, again, you know, the quarterback just has so much time to just sit there and wait for a guy to get open, then just throw the ball out there. So I can do without seeing those. But, you know, I didn't like, you know, the rep with McFadden against Pettis. You know, yeah, Pettis ran a great route. But McFadden just stopped, and those are the things I don't want to see. That's not, you know, you're not competing there. You just, you know, finish the rep, finish the rep. People get cut for that.
Yeah, you get beat so badly that Dante Pettis, by the way, he threw a couple of those out there where he was looking slick running those routes. And I guess we'll start there. Let's start with the wide receiver side of things. Dante Pettis, is he standing out? Early on, I saw a couple of nice catches and a nice plays by Richie James, but Dante Pettis, I think on Sunday at least, had a bunch of good plays and a few that are wowing people around the internet. And you know, of course, these are small samples and people are taking and running with one little video clip of one play, but Dante Pettis looks like the real deal. He can definitely run slick routes, and he made a couple guys look silly in practice.
Yeah, one-on-ones is going to be his thing right now, especially, you know, that's with a lot of younger guys because you don't have to think. You know, he can just use his skill set and put that on full display because he doesn't have to think about what coverage, you know, the defense is running. Okay, is this guy going to be here or there? Okay, do I have to run my route at this depth? Those are things that's going through his mind during 7-on-7 and 11-on-11. So, you know, when I was out there watching them, they didn't do one-on-one. So I just had a chance to kind of just look at him from a pure, you know, team, you know, or 7-on-7 perspective. And you can tell that he's thinking a little bit. You know, he's thinking about, okay, should I be here or should I look now? There was a lot of thinking involved. There was one time where I could tell he wasn't thinking. He just had a slant route. He lined up on the outside. He ran a slant route, and he whooped Maben. Just ran a slant, beat him, caught the ball, made a couple guys miss. And that's what he can do well. I think you're going to see, you know, the best of him. It might not be year one. And a lot of people, I think they expect receivers to come in year one and just do well. And you'll see it here and there. But for the most part, a lot of times, they don't come into their own until like year two and year three. And that might be something that's the case with Pettis. But, you know, luckily for him and for the 49ers, it looks like they have a pretty good group of receivers where they don't need, you know, Pettis to just be the guy right now, year one.
Right, yeah, and one of the things I've liked from Pettis is that he's not the biggest guy, you know, 6 feet, 185, 190 pounds, he was pretty slim. So, you know, I wonder if when things do get a little bit more physical, 11-on-11s in game situations, maybe he gets jammed a little bit more, but man, he looks quick, and he looks like he's going to be able to escape the jam, you know, more so than fight through it. And he might be a weapon in the red zone, too, because he can shake those guys. And Kyle Shanahan's going to be able to draw up some things and try to get him open and get him one-on-one in the end zone. But he can also, it's almost like a little bit of Plastic Man, where he kind of stretches out. And he's got these arms are like, whoa, his arms are really long all of a sudden. And he stretches out and plucks the ball out of the air, and his hands are pure.
Yeah, I heard Larry Kruger say, you know, he just doesn't think that Pettis would get off the press in the NFL. And I disagree. I think he's going to be just fine getting off the press. I mean, the dude is super quick. He's crafty. You know, it for him, it's just going to be the mental part of it and kind of understanding. They're already asking him to do a lot. I saw him pretty much line up, you know, at all three receiver spots. So, you know, that can kind of get your head spinning early on. The sooner he catches on to that, the sooner I think we'll see, you know, a better Dante Pettis. And even then, like you said, you know, just kind of putting on some weight, getting stronger. You know, he is slight right now. I think he's listed at 6'1", 185 pounds. I can easily see him, maybe not this offseason, but next offseason kind of, you know, bulking up to around, you know, 195. And I think he'll still keep his same quickness and route running abilities.
And it looks like he has a little bit of swagger. One of those routes, I think it was against Tyvis Powell, maybe. And he shook him at the line, and then he just instantly put his arm up in the air to say, like, Randy Moss style. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna be open. And he wasn't even open yet. He was still even with the DB about 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, and he threw up that arm like, yeah, I'm going to be open, chuck it deep.
He can run, man. And they make it seem like Pettis is just, you know, oh, you know, he's quicker than fast, or, you know, oh, we don't know his top-end speed. But I'm like, man, that dude can run. He can run. If you beat somebody off the line and throw your hand up, that means, you know, you're very, very confident in your speed. So, yeah, hopefully he's kind of putting those things to rest because, you know, he didn't get to run a 40 at the combine or anything.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons he didn't have a lot of hype coming in the draft either, is because he didn't get that 40 time at the combine and get a little bit of buzz going about his draft stock from a lot of the people that write about the draft. I want to continue the conversation with some wide receivers here before we jump over to the defensive side of the ball, specifically another rookie wide receiver here, but I got to let the listeners know about Vivid Seats, the newest sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace, offers great prices for NFL games and all live events. And we are getting very, very close to those live NFL events. With the NFL returning, Locked On listeners can receive 10% off their first purchase with Vivid Seats. Just go to vividseats.com or download the app and enter promo code Locked On. That's one word. Locked On is the promo code for 10% off for first-time Vivid Seats users. So the Hall of Fame game, which is insane already this week, Bears and Ravens Thursday in Canton, Ohio. That means the NFL regular season is also just around the corner. Don't sit around watching the 49ers from home when you can be at Levi's Stadium in the crowd cheering in person thanks to Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is offering Locked On 49ers listeners 10% off your first ticket order when you use our exclusive promo code Locked On. Again, that's one word, Locked On, new customers only. The offer is good through the end of August. Preseason and regular season tickets are available now. The 49ers open the preseason at home Thursday, August 9th against the Cowboys. Niners kick off their regular season home schedule on Sunday, September 16th, when the Detroit Lions visit Levi's Stadium in week two, and you can be there for all the excitement. Go to vividseats.com or download the app and enter promo code Locked On for 10% off your first order. The NFL is back, and Vivid Seats wants to help you get to the game. Getting back to those rookie wide receivers and another really athletic wide receiver, again, talked about it before, Kyle Shanahan has the type, Dante Pettis that type, and Richie James, definitely that type. Player I really liked coming out of Middle Tennessee. Where was he lining up in practice, and what'd you see from him?
Yeah, he moved around a little bit. Now, he was playing against the threes most of the time. Where guys like, I actually saw Dunbar, I saw Pettis, I saw Bolden, all those guys kind of got some first team reps in the slot. Richie James, he was more against, yeah, just the threes, it seemed like. But he was good. I thought he ran routes very, very well. I knew, you know, just watching his college film, he was pretty athletic. He's not big. He's a smaller guy, maybe like 5'10", 180 pounds, but really good, you know, in and out of his breaks, and he has a little bit of speed on him too to kind of take the top off the defense. We saw that day one where he caught one down the right sideline, kind of outran the corner and the safety help. So Richie James, he's another one. One thing I noticed with all these guys, they're all pretty similar with their skill set. And I was there with my brother and we were watching it, and he's a Steelers fan, so he's used to seeing pretty good receiving play. But he said that all the 49ers receivers to him look sound. They're all technically sound. And I think that's the best way to kind of describe them all.
Yeah, I think it was C.J. Beathard that threw that ball down the right sideline to Richie James, if that's the same play that, mm-hmm. that you're yep. thinking of. Nice throw by C.J. And I think from reports I've heard, actually, that C.J. Beathard's actually looking pretty good in camp as well, and that Jimmy Garoppolo, while looking good sometimes, still not really hitting on those deep balls. Have you seen Jimmy getting those deep balls in?
Yeah, okay. So I think it's a bit overblown. How many times in games do you really throw the ball downfield like that? I think that's what everybody's kind of focusing on. But, you know, just from the practices that I saw, he was eating up the middle of the field. So, from around 12 to 20 yards, he was completing a ton of those passes. So it's not like he's, like, just checking down the ball and only throwing five-yard passes. He was throwing the ball, 15 to 20 yards to Goodwin and Burbridge and all those guys consistently. So until today, I saw the one today. Where he had the highlight throwing downfield to Goodwin. I hadn't seen him throw, completely the ball that deep. But, yeah, he's completed a lot of, 15 to 20-yard passes throughout practice. Like, a lot. Like, not just, like, one or two or three. It's every practice, every period, he's completing several of them.
So let's talk a little bit about the veteran wide receivers then. We've talked about the rookies already. And actually, kind of to that point, Jeff Deeney from Pro Football Focus, who's also a friend of the show, had a good stat on Jimmy G's five games with Marquise Goodwin last year. Goodwin had 29 catches for 384 yards, which is a pretty good average, but still didn't have a single catch over 20 yards. So he had a lot of those in the intermediate range. A lot of dig routes, I remember, from Jimmy G to Goodwin last year.
Yeah, they changed his game up, and I didn't know if that was because they changed the offense a little bit to suit Jimmy Garoppolo more towards kind of what the Patriots do. So I don't know if that was the reason why there were less shots downfield, but I just know the routes that they asked Goodwin to run, he wasn't really – I saw a few of them run downfield, and he was taking, two or three defenders. So I think guys were like, we've seen enough of him catching these deep balls. So they started taking that away, and they started using his speed as a decoy, So instead of, having him run a deep post, all the way downfield, maybe he'd act like he's going post and then break his route off, around 15 yards and complete that. Or there were a lot of, comebacks, trying to get guys to think he's going deep and then, sit it down around, 12 to 15 yards. I think that'll change with Garcon coming back. I think they'll kind of be able to get back to, originally how they wanted to use him, but even in practice so far, aside from the highlight I saw today, in the two practices I was at, I didn't see him really go downfield too much. It was more across the middle, 15 and 20 yard completions to Goodwin.
So you mentioned Pierre Garçon there, and I still fully expect Pierre Garçon to lead the team in targets and be that guy that he's been under Kyle Shanahan before, and be the guy he's been his whole career, but. Is it true that he had, like, zero catches the 2 days that you've watched at camp?
Man, zero. He wasn't even targeted. So I don't know if that's something that's by design or if he was just getting taken out of, plays by Richard Sherman because he lined up on that side a lot. But, it's crazy because the first day I actually forgot that, I was so focused on the defense, watching the secondary, and I'm like, man, did Garcon practice today? But I know I saw him out there with the because he had his like full uniform pants on. So I'm like, I saw him out there, but was he in team? And sure enough, he was out there every play, but every time with the ones, but he just didn't get a ball thrown at him. So the next day, I really paid attention to Garcon a little bit more, and yeah, he just zero targets in 2 days, and not just in 11 on 11, he didn't have any targets in 7 on 7 either. So. Yeah, I don't know if that's a chemistry thing or, because, he hadn't, got to throw to him during, last season. I mean, they've had all the OTAs and minicamps, though, to kind of get that connection going. But, yeah, it was pretty much non-existent, at least in the 2 days I was there.
Tarvarius Moore, rookie third rounder for the 49ers. Is he looking like a project? Are you seeing somebody who should be an NFL corner out there, or is he looking more like the safety he was in college?
Yeah, the first day he flashed a little bit. He had an interception that he took away from Pettis. It looked like it was really supposed to be a catch, but he kind of like ripped the ball away from Pettis. So that was a nice play to see him fight, you know, fight to the end and make that play. After that, he had another pass breakup. He gave up like, you know, little short little catches. I think there are some things that he's definitely going to have to work on. I saw in day two, I saw him get turned around a little bit by Bolden. Did like a full like 180 at the line of scrimmage. So you don't want to see that. But I'd say right now, yeah, he wouldn't be ready to probably just play day one. But towards the middle of the season, I think you'd see a much better product out of him. He definitely has the tools, and you know, it's just about him like learning to be a little bit more consistent. But I think he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was like for last year's third-round cornerback, Akella Witherspoon, in his rookie year. He wasn't ready to go, and it was pretty obvious early on. And then by the end of the season, almost looked like a different guy. And that's, I mean, like you mentioned with wide receivers earlier, not getting on the field, I think with every position, it's not easy. You know, you want to pencil all these rookies in to big things in the NFL. It's not easy, man. These guys need some time to develop out there.
Right. Their heads are all spinning right now. And it's like a cram session. You know, they're just cramming all this information into their, you know, their minds, you know, during this training camp. And, you know, there's a lot of thinking. And when you're thinking, you're not playing full speed. So
any other young DBs showing off some advanced technique, or maybe on the flip side of that, some things you didn't like out of some of the young defensive backs in the 49ers?
For the most part, I thought, you know, the guys that you kind of think will make it, I thought they did well. There wasn't anything that was, like, too alarming aside from maybe Ward. He got beat a few times, Jimmy Ward. So him and Richard Sherman, they were rotating every two plays they would rotate, you know, even with the ones. And it just seemed like they weren't throwing at Richard Sherman, but they always found Ward. So, yeah, you know, I just kind of noticed he was a little bit up and down. I don't even think I saw him break up a pass. Akella Witherspoon, I thought he definitely has taken the next step. I know, you know, one-on-ones, everybody wants to look at one-on-ones. I don't really care too much about that with Akella. But in team, he's done fairly well. I think that was him that got beat today by Goodwin deep. But, you know, again, Goodwin, that speed is something different. But aside from that, he's actually held his own against Goodwin. He's pretty much matched up on them every time they go. You know, team or 707, they line up on the same side. And I mean, he's knocked away a lot of passes. He's given up a couple to Goodwin, but the confidence, you can kind of just see that. Like it just he was the first person out there warming up. You know, he has a little bit more bounce to his step. It's something really cool to kind of watch. And even talking to his father, you know, his father's telling me about how, you know, he just kind of gets it now and he understands it. And Richard Sherman, I think the biggest thing to take away is how every time Akella Witherspoon comes to the sideline, Richard Sherman is the first person to greet him and just coach him up and really be like that on-field coach, on-field mentor. It's something, you know, really good to see. It can only help him.
Yeah, I love that. And also, Akella Witherspoon looking visibly bigger than he was last year when he started the season. So a little bit of strength yeah. will help that too. Eric Crocker, my guest on Locked On 49ers, former NFL and Canadian Football League cornerback. He's a DB specialist, so I think we got to talk a little bit more about the defensive backs here. The rookie fifth-rounder DJ Reed, he's a player that I would thought might surprise people with how ready he is to play, maybe get in there and work in the slot. And I know in OTAs he worked a little bit at free safety as well, but is he kind of ahead of some of the other rookies like Tarvarius Moore, even though he's a fifth-round pick?
Well, I saw him playing a lot of, with the twos, he played a lot of free safety. He actually didn't play a whole lot of slot.
Okay.
While I was out there. I thought that would be more of his spot, but I think just because of the depth that they have at slot with Kawan Williams, with Jimmy Ward, maybe they just want to, you know, make sure that they have a little bit more depth at that free safety spot. Because if Colbert goes down, I think we all, you know, expect Jimmy Ward to be the primary backup to gain their, you know, every position. But maybe they have, you know, something else in mind, and they want to see DJ Reed back there if Colbert goes down. So that was the one thing that kind of jumped out to me, you know, with Reed. He's playing more free safety than slot. But when I did see him in the slot, I thought he did well. There were a couple times he got his hands on Dante Pettis, and I made note of that. I thought that was pretty good. Showed a lot of patience in the slot, good press technique. So, yeah, he looks like, you know, he's going to be definitely be a decent football player. He had an interception today. I saw him get an interception today. So I don't know if he was at safety or slot, but, you know, it's good to, you know, see a lot of the young guys out there, you know, making plays.
Absolutely. And I know there's not a lot of hitting quite yet going on in camp. There's a little bit. I saw Reuben Foster knock somebody off his feet. But have you seen anything that flashed with you for the safeties, especially the starters in Tart and Adrian Colbert, who are going to be counted on to take big leaps in their careers this year?
They were a little quiet. I think in the first day I saw Colbert, like, he was closing really fast. The defense was just playing fast in general, especially the ones. They play extremely fast. But I didn't see anything jump out to me about the safeties at all. They were fairly quiet. I thought, you know, after the day three, I think it was Colbert had, you know, an interception and, you know, a couple of pass breakups. I think he kind of did a little bit more day three and maybe day four. But the first 2 days I was there, they were a little quiet. And I'm expecting a big year out of Colbert. I think just from the film that I've seen, the range that he shows, the instincts that he shows, I think he can be one of the better single high safeties in the league. I think the 49ers got really lucky on that pick. That was a good one. His film is pretty. It was one of the most impressive. And I've seen a lot of other single high safety. I know a lot of people wanted Hooker with the Colts, and I watched a lot of him and tried to compare that to Colbert's. And I think even with how well Hooker played, I still might take Colbert's five games over what I saw from Hooker before his ACL.
Yeah, Malik Hooker's thing was less physicality, more just his ability to go. He would kind of cheat a little bit in college. That's one thing I worried about with him with his conversion to the NFL. Because Malik Hooker would go up and kind of cheat to one side of the field, and I thought NFL quarterbacks might be able to manipulate him with their eyes. But he can go up and get the ball and take the ball away. That's what I love from Malik Hooker. But, man, like you, I think the 49ers lucked out on Colbert, seeing his range and seeing the way he hit people. I didn't expect that. And I don't think the 49ers expected it either. They definitely got lucky because they had him at a different position. Yeah,
I mean, I know they brought him in knowing that he can kind of play both, but – you know, when everything kind of started off, he was playing corner and had to go play safety because of all the injuries.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so they definitely lucked out there. And I loved what I saw from Colbert last year. And it pretty much tells you everything you need to know, that the coaching staff kept Colbert there and has moved Jimmy Ward instead. And he was the guy that was starting free safety last year. So, the big things for the 49ers secondary, really hoping for a big leap and huge years from a lot of players, especially those two safeties. It's going to be a fun season, man. It's going to be a fun season there. Any other just overviews? We talked a lot about the defensive backs and the wide receivers here. Anything else you saw that really stuck out to you in camp? I know you mentioned the defense early on was kind of dominating the offensive side of the ball. Was there a healthy dose of DeForest Buckner and maybe last year's first round picks in Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster involved there?
You know, just kind of, you know, gloss over a few guys I thought played well in the practices that I saw. Buckner for sure. And that, like, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to miss him because he's so big, but he's very disruptive as well. I thought with the running backs, McKinnon, there's a run play action period that they do. And I want to say, like, the first time he touched the ball, he pretty much outran everybody, including Richard Sherman. He outran everybody. So I think McKinnon is going to be good. And then after that, Breda and Joe Williams is looking really good. And I don't want to, you know, the practices I saw, they didn't have pads on, so, you know, I don't want to put too much on it, but it looked like he continued that in the third practice where he, you know, broke 65 yards to the house. So Williams is looking pretty good. McKinnon out the backfield and catching the ball. Brad is running very hard. But there was a surprise person that kind of, I don't want to say wowed me, but I was like, two guys, Bolden and Dunbar. Both of those guys, I thought they were doing very well getting open, running routes. They were very consistent. I didn't see any drops from them. They looked strong. They looked fast. I saw Bolden catch a slant route and take it all the way, like, 65 yards, untouched. Again, it was against, like, the threes, but, yeah, he caught a slant route and he was gone. I think all the receivers, man, they've all shown that they definitely belong in the NFL and they can play here. Even like Max McCaffrey, he caught a deep ball. So, now it's something really good to see because we haven't had, a really dynamic receiving corps since I don't know.
It's been a while.
Well, you know what? Now that you've mentioned all these wide receivers, the one guy you haven't mentioned is your boy, Kendrick Bourne. I mean, I feel like I got to give you a few seconds to talk about Kendrick Bourne, or else he might get mad at you.
So Kendrick, he's another guy that's just been consistent. He didn't get a whole lot of targets, but he definitely just did his job. He caught a couple of slants. He's getting open. He caught a back shoulder fade on Ward that was perfectly thrown by C.J. Beathard. I'm expecting a lot of things from him. I want to see how they decide to use him, and I'm interested to see if they do any phasing out, because, you know, just kind of what I've seen, you know, not really involving Garcon. I wonder if maybe they're kind of going more towards the younger guys, and if that means anything. I don't want to look too much into it or start any rumors, but, right, you know, maybe a trade or, you know, something like that. They believe that, you know, these younger guys can kind of take that next step, especially a guy like Bourne. I'm very interested to see how all that works, because, you know, in those five games last year, there was no Garcon on the field, and they had the most, you know, high-powered offense in the league. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that whole thing goes. Oh, and Trent Taylor's not playing. You know, he has a back injury or something.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know if that means, you know, I've seen a lot of other guys getting reps. You know, they can only keep, you know, five or six receivers. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did some weird stuff and placed him on IR to kind of stash him for half the season to see if some of these other guys pan out.
Yeah, they could do the pup list thing where they keep him out for the first 6 weeks or so.
Right.
And, yeah, so there's some options there, and they do have numbers that they didn't have last year and some depth at wide receiver, so that's a good point. And I talked about it on the podcast before that I thought that Pierre Garcon would, there's a very good chance he wasn't going to be back next year. But I like you mentioned, I could see that being a situation where they're looking at the roster and they don't want to, say, cut someone like Richie James and lose him because they can't sneak him to the practice squad. And if they think they can get by and not pay the salary of someone that's making a lot of money like Pierre Garcon, I could see some, you know, with the 49ers sticking with the youth movement and saving a little bit of money and having some surprise cuts there. But I fully don't expect it. But, that's kind of out there. I can see that happening.
It depends on just kind of where they think they are. If they truly feel like they're still kind of in rebuilding mode, then there's no way. Or then that's when you can kind of maybe let go of Garcon. But if you feel like you have some type of chance this year, I think you keep Garcon because you need that veteran leader, that veteran presence, you know, to kind of, you know, keep these young guys, you know, moving forward. I think you need that. So if they feel like there's a playoff push, you keep him. But if you think that you're still, you know, kind of far away, I think there might be a chance that they let him go and kind of develop some of these younger guys.
Right. Or unless he just looks like he's done. And that would be another reason.
Or that. Yeah, because he was non-existent.
That's definitely something to monitor going forward. Could talk to you all night about this stuff, Eric, but I got to let you go here. Thank you so much for joining the program once again here. And let's do it again, man, because I love talking with you, especially looking at those DBs. And there's a lot of young guys to talk about. So as the preseason goes along before we get to the regular season, maybe do it again, huh?
Yeah, well, I'll be at practice on Tuesday, so we'll see if I see anything interesting happen.
Awesome. And yeah, I'll be monitoring that Twitter account for sure for you guys to follow him on Twitter. You can find him at Eric_Crocker. And of course, he's got some stuff going up at 4th and 9 as well as doing the podcast with Dylan DeSimone at 4thandnine.com. So check that stuff out. Eric, always fun talking to you. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks again to my guest today, Eric Crocker, for joining the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going to get into the mailbag on Tuesday and also hit a few questions with Nick Winkler for Winky Wednesday. So I know there's a lot of new ideas and questions bouncing around your heads following the opening of training camp and seeing all these reports and video clips and getting this information from the first a few days of training camp. So we'll hit a mailbag, get those questions in at BDPeacock on Twitter, or email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.